You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums Must Hear Before You Die. This episode, we'll be talking about Depeche Mode, Violator. In the room, I have Rob.
Hey, buddy.
And on the line, I have Kyle.
Oh, hi.
And Solange.
Hey.
Violator is a seventh studio album by English electronic music band Depeche Mode. It was first released 19th of March, 1990 on Mute Records internationally and Siren Reprise in the U.S. Produced by Depeche Mode and Flood. And the genre is synth pop, alternative rock, dance, and goth rock. I'm going to read from the book, Bruno McDonald. In March 1990, Depeche Mode launched a new album with what they assumed would be a low-key appearance in LA Warehouse Records. Instead, five fans were hospitalized when, according to police, 30,000 showed up. Small wonder the band's ensuing tour was dubbed World Violation. Oddly, the album that secured their superstardom was far more subdued than its booming predecessor, Music for the Masses. Only Personal Jesus, based on a Gary Glitter stomp, seems suited to stadiums. The rest is writer Martin Gore's most addictive set of songs, from the techno-tinged World in My Eyes through the delicate Waiting for the Night to the ominous Clean. The breathing space afforded by Gore's 1989 covers set Counterfeit had evidently worked wonders. Four hits were the reward, of which Enjoy the Silence became their greatest international success. Beautifully produced by Flood, who also worked with Depeche Mode fans, Nine Inch Nails, the result is so seamless that it takes several listens to realize it is Gore, not David Gahan, singing Sweetest Perfection and Blue Dress. Credit should also be paid to keyboardist Alan Wilde's superb arrangements throughout. Violator represents a group at the top of their game and still sounds effortlessly exciting today. All right, what do we think of Depeche Mode, Violator?
Oh, man, fucking sick.
Listen to this Stone Cold day. Classic.
This is amazing.
God.
I don't want to sound clear or nothing, but I think Depeche Mode is a sweet band.
They are pretty great, and this is... Would you...
This is one of the best albums ever written, man.
It's
absolutely unfuckin'-withable. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I had no idea that in the U.S. at this time, they were just teetering on people starting to get into Depeche Mode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that little... clip video thing that you put up.
Yeah, there is clips
insane
of people insane camping out for like a week just to get an autograph of the new album, and it's 30,000 people, and they have just they've covered the streets in LA.
Yeah, like city blocks.
Yeah, it's.
I would say it's just so wild how a band like this that has a really specific sound, you know, a very like alternative sound is. They're so widely accepted and celebrated. Like it's like, I don't want to call them pop, but it's like the pop man's goth music, you know, it's accessible. That's what I wanted to say. It is so accessible for the masses, which is so amazing.
Music for the masses.
Oh. Yeah. But they're so like, you hear them at goth nights and you know, it's subversive, but people love them like widely. And I think that's so cool about this band.
I think that's one of the reasons this thing went, what was it, 7.5 million copies.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, that's a huge number. And you're right. It appeals to people who are into alternative rock, people who are into dance, people who are into goth, people who are into like synth pop. It runs the gamut and it's impeccably delivered throughout this album. From the ballads to, we're listening to Personal Jesus right now, which is, hell of a song.
I never thought about Personal to Jesus being a Gary Glitter stomp, but now I can't unhear it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of rough.
It's so funny. Like, I remember where I was when Fletch died. I was driving in LA with my friend who lives in Vegas. You know, she's not like a huge Depeche Mode fan, and like, she's an emo person, but she's not like a goth rock person, but I would say she's like open, you know? And there's so many songs that, because I was in LA, they're playing it on K-Rock, and there were so many Depeche Mode songs that they would just play all day. And my friend was just like, wow, I didn't realize Depeche Mode like could sound like this. And I'm like, dude, that's what's so cool about this band is they're like kind of all over the place, but they're so poppy and accessible for people. You know, they love them.
Catalog runs deep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say I listened to some of the earlier, what would you call, kind of boy band. I don't know.
No, I would call it a boy.
Synth
come
boy
on.
Band?
Yeah, sure.
It's a boy.
Yeah, before 86, they were a little bit of a boy band.
Okay.
Yeah. All I want to do is boop, boop,
yeah,
see
yeah, okay.
you. Yeah, they're a boy band. Let's
crushing heroin habits.
Yeah. Hey, but I love the boy band stuff. I am not knocking it.
Yeah, I was going to say, that is
catchy.
That I couldn't really get into it. And I think that's, I had always associated them, except for this album. I obviously knew about this album, but I was like, when does the change happen? Like, I guess I'd always just seen the later Depeche Mode, the whatever classic Depeche Mode.
Mm-hmm. It started of 86.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah, it's the same band, different look.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I feel like their music videos also like really changed in tone around this time. You look at the music videos from Construction Time again, like they're a little more like artsy. And I'm not saying these aren't, but like the music videos of Violator are so much darker in not necessarily in tone, but they're just, there's a definite edge to them that isn't present in like their past videos, other than I would say, Never Let Me Down Again on Music for the Masses. Like Halo's my favorite song on this
Halo's
album.
Halo's so good.
Yeah,
and that video is so where Dave is like the world's strongest man and Martin Gore's like a clown. Very young Jenna Elfman there too. Like very, very young Jenna Elfman. But yeah, like they really just turned into this darker, edgier band. And it's so apparent in everything that they do at this point.
I think they got a lot of help too from was it Anton Corbin who had he continued to direct all their black and white, and it's that grainy black and white kind of filmmaking.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He was very talented doing a lot of the artwork, including the cover for this. Very stark, very what we would consider that sort of like gothic attitude or style where everything is harsh black and whites and with like a saturated colors and things.
Oh yeah. I mean, Personal Jesus is such a cool video where they're like goth cowboys and it is so grainy. It's got that like washed out feeling, but they do such a great job of evoking like a spaghetti Western with that video.
I think with their sound, to build on what you guys are saying, like their sound and their videos, like once they got into the 90s, you know, all the way up until like 96 is Ultra, they were able to follow those trends. Like they weren't like most 80s, you know, synth groups that kind of fell out of favor once Nevermind came out. You know, they just kept going and their music evolved. And a lot of that was, I mean, it's just what I think, but a lot of that was just...
No, I don't disagree. They're timeless. Like I think I mentioned this on the last time we talked about Depeche Mode. Like I grew up listening to the extremes of Depeche Mode, which was like, just can't get enough. And then my mom loves Martin Gore and thinks Martin Gore is like the most talented, handsome, amazing man who's ever lived. Like you can't convince my mom that Martin Gore has done anything wrong. But she owned Exciter, which has like Dream on it. And like that was what I listened to growing up, like this very different. Yes. So when I heard Personal Jesus, I was like, this is Depeche Mode? This is like the greatest song I've ever heard in my entire life. This is what they sound like. And
Exciter was like the first Depeche Mode album that I was like, eh. Maybe I'll pause these guys for a while.
I only grew up with
until playing the Angel. That's when I got back into him. But I'm sorry. I just had to bring it up.
One Depeche Mode album. And
that was Solange's entry. That was my exit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that one of their talents, not only being talented musicians and willing to continue after, you know, members left the band, is that they were able to kind of ride a wave of the what was happening around them. It wasn't they stuck to this style and then they were like, oh, well, now like the Who in the 80s, like, oh, do we need to put synthesizers and things and do that? Like, it wasn't a big change. It's like they were already kind of looking to the future with the sound they had.
Yeah.
And they continued to evolve as the other bands around them kind of caught up to them. And I think they were then kind of on top at that time to then continue on. And you're right, you know, people maybe in the 90s when grunge and rock and roll was like a big thing, I don't think they necessarily, you know, like changed as much. It's just they kind of evolved a little bit. It's like they had to do these little evolutions, micro evolutions, as they were making these different albums. And you're right, like this, the singles before this album, Personal Jesus, Enjoy the Silence, I think that just kicked it off. Like when those came out and people heard those, they're like, oh, maybe I do like Depeche Mode. Like it's, yeah, they're game changer of songs.
You know, they still pack stadiums. I've never seen them live. Old neighbors have apparently seen them live like 20 times or something wild. But they pack it. And I was watching like live footage of them recently. And like Martin Gore had like face sparkles and angel wings. And I was like, oh my God. And I've said this before. I just don't really enjoy live music. It's just way too loud for me. And I especially don't enjoy like big things. And I would go see a stadium show for Depeche Mode. Absolutely. It looks like they still crush it based on what I've, you know, watched of theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every indication is that they are 100% a band to see live, and they're wonderful live. I did read that when they were touring, David was having like heroin addiction. He didn't miss a show. That was like really important to him, is that he never missed a show, even though he was like in the throes of like heroin addiction. Mm-hmm. It just, I was very impressed, because many, many performing artists, like, they just can't keep it together enough to do that. And that was pretty, pretty amazing that he could do it.
Is number the 167th greatest album of all time on Rolling Stone's 2020 500 greatest albums of all time.
We looked at that list before.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good. That's pretty apt, I would say.
I think so.
It's pretty amazing. And those are rock and roll albums, did you say, or just albums in general?
Albums in general.
Okay. I mean, is this one of the pinnacles of what we would call like synth rock? Or
I think this is top of the synth pop pile, probably.
Okay. It's not one of my favorite records by them, but it is an incredible record. And this is also like right after 101, right? Release after 101?
Yes. That was in 1989. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 101 is just an incredible album and film if you've ever seen it. It's just like a live concert, but that was... Like we were mentioning earlier, we were talking about Depeche Mode as a live act, and the idea of a live electronic act was kind of a joke,
right,
back then. And people dismissed Depeche Mode out of hand, and that's why there's a video single off of 101 that they, Everything Counts.
Oh God,
my version of Everything
that song.
Counts. Yeah, that's what they closed with on that tour, and it's an incredible, incredible live performance where they stop playing and the audience keeps singing.
We got Waiting for the Night in our cans right now, and all I can think is I think they really liked Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
This was later covered by a Ghost or Ghost BC.
Really?
On a B-side. It's wonderful, though. Yeah,
lovely. Beautiful. Yeah, they didn't really switch much up as far as the equipment they were using from the get-go. This is all just the EMS VCS3, a Mini Moog, an Oberheim OB8, and using the effects wise as the Roland Space Echo.
Yeah, I heard the producer, we should mention him, Mark Flood Ellis. Yeah. If you're not familiar with Flood, I mean,
guys. Prolific.
Yeah, amazing stuff. But he was using the ARP 2600 for a lot of the effects and for a lot of the tracks. I had forgotten how good the production is this album.
Dude, put a decent pair of headphones on, like just everything that's happening, left, right, pan, just like snappy fucking filters. Like it's so good.
Yeah.
It's such a perfect album. And like, I know, as opposed to some of the other artists we listened to where the selection was not, you know, very good at indicating like their style or what they're known for. Like, I would argue that Violator is like, that's the, to me, definitive Depeche Mode work. You know, I think it's what people think of when they think of Depeche Mode. You know, we think of Enjoy the Silence. I mean, not for me or Kyle, but I think if you were to ask like,
For your typical poser, this is the Depeche Mode.
What about music for the masses, though? I mean,
no,
I don't think
there's a lot. That thing, okay.
Yeah, I think this is so much more long lasting, and I'm going to use the example again of Grand Theft Auto, wherein you hear songs if you're going to hear a song that's in a video game that's supposed to be contemporaneous to a certain time, the music is pretty important, indicating the feel of that contemporaneous time. And I thought Personal Jesus was a really appropriate choice, looking back on my pleasure of playing Grand Theft Auto.
Okay, which Grand Theft Auto? Just curious.
San Andreas.
Okay.
It was my favorite video game for a long time.
Grand Theft Auto 5 featured Francois Kevorkian, who was the mixer on this album. He did the entire DJ mix on the electronic station.
Oh, that is so cool.
GTA 5.
That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. Wow.
When Flood proposed that they do a up-tempo pop song for Enjoy the Silence, he was not excited to have it. He said it was all wrong. This shouldn't be done this way. He didn't want guitars. Flood asked him play guitar on it. And Martin Gore was like, no, this sounds all wrong.
That's right.
He did it up until they released it. He did not like this song. He did not want it produced this way. And Flood and the rest of the band just had to fight him and say, dude, this is it. Like, obviously they're most popular. They're probably their
Definitely up there. One of the things with this recording, different to all of the other recordings they had done previously, is like Gore was the main songwriter, right?
Mm-hmm.
He would come with the everything just like demoed to the point like where the last album was, maybe the last album we covered, I'm not sure. Basically, like it was the demos that they tweaked. And Flood said, hey, back off on finishing the demos so we can actually work on stuff in the studio, which gives this album its flavor.
I think so too. Yeah. The experimentation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It just feels a little, it has these interesting quirks to it. Yep.
It doesn't really feel like a 90s album to me almost. It feels out of time almost. It's timeless. I think I said they're a timeless band, but I mean that in the way that like, this album doesn't sound like 1990 to me. It sounds like something else. And I couldn't even tell you what year, you know. Yeah. We're listening to Enjoy the Silence. And it's like, you could have told me this song came out in 85 and I'd believe you. I mean.
Yeah, I agree. It's very.
Yeah.
Well produced and.
Mm-hmm. You know, if only they could have every Depeche Mode album and realize that Depeche Mode is like maybe the best band of all time. I mean, it's fine. It's fine this time. It's fine this edition. You know, there's more editions he could come out with. I love this song. This was like my number one song on Spotify for like 3 years in a row. It's such a fucking banger.
It's such a beautiful song. It's a perfect song.
Yeah. I danced to this so much at goth night when I was like in my mid 20s. Like this song came on and I was like, oh, time to go fucking ape shit. Like, oh, I love this fucking song. Ugh.
Who doesn't love a sad, sexy, creepy song?
I love a sad, sexy, creepy song.
Have you guys heard the Linkin Park remix of this?
Oh my god!
Cut that. Yes, I'm gonna go do that after.
Cut his mic, please.
Ryan Paulson has it on vinyl. Listen to it at his house.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. One of the they were really into what was going on with the hip hop scene.
Yeah.
At this point, and they actually to the point where one of the tracks they sample from an unknown hip hop record, the When the Levee Breaks loop, and then used it on one of the tracks in here. But they also got into sampling a little bit. So one of the things they would do is they would sample like a string like sample, fuck with it. And then add more strings on top of it to build like a weirder sort of orchestral type thing, which is what I'm currently doing in my basement.
I'm doing it in my basement, the same equipment. It's really fun.
I don't have a complaint about this record, but I'll tell you who did.
Who?
Kreisgau.
Was it Kreisgau?
Son of a bitch.
Oh my God, Kreisgau.
Kreisgau, Violator. Fearing the loss of their silly grip on American angst-ridden teens, who they are old enough to know are a fickle lot, they forge on towards the rap market by rhyming drug and thug. And for the UK ecstasy-riding teens, who God knows are even more fickle, there's the techno-perfect synth-slash-guitar-sigh-slash-moan that punctuates the easily rescinded policy of truth. C-.
Amazing.
Dude, sometimes I wonder, I know I've said a lot, Kreisgau, who hurt you, but sometimes I wonder, like, do things happen to him before he listened? Like, did someone key his car that day and then he listened to this album? Or is it like the toilet broke?
On the, the aggregate that the wiki has of like reviewers, like Kreisgau was the only one that wasn't 5 stars.
Yeah.
Like he just, something about this band, like, he just couldn't get over.
I don't think he listened with headphones. Like,
no, he couldn't.
Yeah, there's just no way.
There's like, I don't know, like a city bus with the Violator, like, you know, thing coming across and it hit a puddle and he got splashed. Yeah.
He's like the mean critic in Ratatouille.
He heard it in the elevator going up to his office. And that's why, guys.
What do you guys think about the instrumentals?
Love them.
I like them.
They're fantastic.
I think that's reaction. That's my big complaint about requesting Personal Jesus on the radio to the high school radio station, which I do a lot, is
high schoolers, huh?
Listen, I constantly request Depeche Mode on the high school radio station. My big complaint about doing that and like the music video is there's like a whole other section of Personal Jesus that you never hear.
Yeah.
And like, I know it's like a slow burn instrumental thing, but like that, the bridge between Enjoy the Silence and Policy of Truth, I think they're integral to like understanding like what makes Depeche Mode a really strong electronic band.
I agree with that.
Yeah. 100%.
I think it knits these different pop songs together. It shows they can do a bit more and have things that are a bit more off kilter and interesting in between each of the like pop gems, essentially.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I would love to hear, maybe you guys can tell me as Depeche Mode fans, if there's more of that. Is there some sort of album or like did they do any experimental stuff that's ambient?
Martin Gore has a solo record that's like that. That came out kind of around the same time as this, and it actually has a cover of one of their songs from Construction Time Again. And like he does a lot of that stuff. And I would say that Exciter is a little more like not necessarily ambient, but a little more like slower than a lot of their albums. Yeah, it's a slower album.
Okay.
Every time you say Exciter, I just am thinking of Judas Priest.
Well, yeah.
Love Depeche Mode. Think Exciter should have like little quotes around its title.
I enjoy it, but that's, you know, the album I grew up on. Yeah, so I mean, sure. What are you gonna do?
I did read something this week that I was like, man, this is heavy. And it's obviously we're not gonna get Depeche Mode again, but obviously David had a bit of a problem with drugs. He was in
a bit.
Yeah. In and out of rehab and everything, but in, what was it, May 1996, substances nearly killed the singer while living in Hollywood Sunset Marquee. He injected a large combination of heroin, cocaine, he overdosed, and they said he was technically dead for 6 minutes. In this quote, he says, "All I saw and all I felt at first was complete darkness. I've never been in a space that was blacker. And I remember feeling that whatever I was doing, it was really, really wrong."
Wow.
That sounds terrifying.
You know, I've heard suicide victims say the same thing, especially people who like jump off the Golden Gate Bridge and survive, because it takes a long time to fall. And in the fall, they realize all of the issues. Up. Yeah, like essentially, this was a mistake. Like all the issues that they had were fixable. And it's just that the solutions weren't in front of their face. You know, I'm not surprised he had that reaction. And that is sad.
Luckily, he did enroll in the Exodus Recovery Center, California, and he's been able to stay relatively drug free.
I got a fun thing before you do your quiz. Fun story about jumping off a bridge. Turns out, like, for the longest time, people thought that they were just, like, suicide. People who were committing suicide were just stripping before they jumped off the bridge. Mm-hmm. But the impact Mm-mm. into the water caused their clothes to explode off of them.
Crazy.
Yeah. There's a real fun book called Stiff that I recommend everybody read.
Oh, by Deborah Bloom?
Fascinating shit. Yep.
All right, here's your quiz. Three questions, though. True or false, this is the longest time they ever spent on an album.
False.
False.
It's got to be false. Wait, but
of any band.
What do you
or
mean
Depeche
time?
Mode?
Of Depeche Mode.
Of Depeche Mode.
Oh.
I was
about to say this.
Yeah, true. I'm going to go with true.
True.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Right, cool.
They spent over a year with this album. And as far as I can tell, it was the longest time they spent recording. So the band, they worked with Flood at Mute's Worldwide Programming Room in London for 3 weeks, after which they flew to Milan for new sessions at the Logic Studios. And according to Flood, they did not do a substantial amount of work in Milan.
You don't say.
It was basically partying hard and hardly working.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Nice.
Get me there.
Second question. At a show in 1993 in New Orleans, Gahan suffered a drug-related heart attack on stage. While he was being carried out on a stretcher, the rest of the band broke into song. Which song did they start playing? Was it Personal Jesus, Death's Door, or Never Let Me Down Again?
Can I
Never Let Me Down Again?
Never Let Me
Down. I'm sure it was Never Let Me Down Again.
No, it was Death's Door.
Really? That's a little on the nose.
No. I can't believe they did that after this.
That's really funny.
That's kind of, I wonder if they all like, okay, if he ever collapses on stage, we start playing this song, Handshake.
God.
Now the question is, did he know they were going to do that?
Did he request it?
Gahan said, question three. Gahan said in Jonathan Miller's book, Stripped Depeche Mode, that, quote, this band joined the tour, but the group had a miserable time. According to a feature in Q, the members of the band were so shaken by Depeche Mode's level of excess that they swore off the many drugs they had previously used as musical inspiration and recorded their next album with zero input of powder, pill, or spliff.
Can you give me a year?
What band? The band options, I can't give you a year, but the band options are Primal Scream, KLF, or Nitzer Ebb.
Nitzer Ebb?
It's Nitzer Ebb.
It's gotta be Nitzer Ebb.
It's gotta be Nitzer Ebb.
It's Primal Scream.
Primal Scream.
Oh.
What? Oh. Damn. Kyle and I are posers. What are we going to do?
Amazing.
No, I'm kidding.
Good job. Thanks for playing.
Can I describe? I have a very happy memory with this album. I was in Chicago with like three of my really good friends to see Neil Breen. And nice. We were, oh yeah, it was a lot of fun. We saw his new movie. But on the way to go see his new movie, my friend's boyfriend was driving us around Chicago. And I love this man. He is like the worst driver in the world. Like the kind of person that in Chicago rush hour traffic will just play Pokemon Go while driving. Policy of Truth came on the radio and both me and my other friend were like, oh fuck, I love this song. And he, man, blasted it with the windows rolled down, Chicago, November, fresh snow. And it is like one of my favorite memories to just be like blazing around Chicago while my friend's playing Pokemon Go, listening to Policy of Truth on like full ass blast. It was like, this is so perfect.
Solange, I can picture it in my mind and it's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It was great.
I don't know. I've been listening to a lot of Low recently.
Mm-hmm.
Not the band, David Bowie record.
I understand.
And I think it's really cool to see like all of that shit that he was doing on side two kind of like,
oh yeah,
come to fruition.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, Rob, you've been listening to side B of Low recently?
Yeah, a lot.
I mean, he was looking at Kraftwerk and Depeche Mode cites Kraftwerk as 100%. Being the band.
Yeah.
So
just making sure you're okay.
Oh, man, you can pick up a lot of really good samples off of that.
No, it's good stuff, but it just...
No vocals.
Yeah. Some people like to listen to sad music for fun.
Kyle knows.
I know, but I gotta check in on my peers.
Yeah, gotta check in on your boys. Yeah, I fucking
gotta do a buddy check.
I have no qualms with anything that's going on in this record. I think it's one of the most beautiful records I've made.
Yeah,
like, single-handedly, just like
good.
I mean, everything that's just happening in the fucking years, man.
Like, this should be on the playlist of listen with headphones.
Absolutely,
100%.
A good set of headphones.
Yes.
The joke is that this is my, not like just this album, but in general, it's like, excuse me, this is my emotional support Depeche Mode. And like, this is one of this album and like Construction Time Again, I have a Depeche Mode playlist that's like all my favorite Depeche Mode songs, but there's two albums that I will listen to outside of just the playlist. And this is one, and Construction Time Again is the other. Cause it's just so good. And I could like listen to Policy of Truth or like World in My Eyes, like on my playlist, but it just feels different to listen to it progressively as it was intended.
I'll tell you this, personal experience with this record this past week. I've been doing a lot of walking again and,
that's awesome.
The nature trails, at dusk when the deer come out.
That's right.
And you have this going on in your brain and the deer just staring at you. Pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
Highly recommended.
Oh, yeah. I listened to this album a lot when I was driving to Nevada last year, and I'm going to be driving to Nevada in a few weeks, and I can guarantee you when I hit the dusty desert, this guy's going to be on repeat. It's going to be so fucking sick. Dude. It's going to be sick as hell.
All right. I think we're all on the positive on this.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
No problem.
Listen to this album or you're wrong.
Yeah.
All right. Next time we'll be talking about Pixies, Bossa Nova. All right. Thanks, y'all. When everything is bearable, and there in the still, all that you feel is tranquility. Mm-hmm.
a star in the sky.